You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
So here's something of a paradox. Even though every aspect of our relatively open political system in the United States is scrutinized by the media, even the global media, Americans are not generally thought of as politically obsessed. Our voting patterns often suggest disengagement, in fact, and apathy rather than street brawl involvement. Yet, our media love to create contests and competition, and commercial brands love to connect with people at their most passionate, and increasingly, politics has become a way for Americans to identify themselves, a team sport, if you will. Perhaps it was always this way, but the division of America into so many political teams has implications for our national life in this particular age, outlined by our next guest, Stefan Schmidt, professor of political science at Iowa State University and a contributor to our co-producer WNYC's political website, itsafreecountry.org. Professor, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Also with us, another professor, Thomas Edsel, professor at the Columbia Journalism School, author of The Age of Austerity, How Scarcity Will Remake American Politics. Welcome to you, Thomas.
Good to be with you.
So, Stefan, let's begin. Is politics a team sport, and can brands take advantage of this? Can people choose everything in their lives to orient along their political lines to the exclusion of all else?
Well, more and more, it seems as though that's happening. I mean, when the Republican candidates were campaigning in Iowa, they stopped mostly at what are called pizza ranch restaurants, and these are actually Christian pizza restaurants that are a ministry. I was astonished because Democrats stay away from the pizza ranch. So if even food becomes political, we're definitely headed in the direction of a kind of silos and polarization.
Thomas Edsel, is this an opportunity for pizza ranches and other businesses, or does it reflect something being driven within the culture itself?
Well, increasingly, the two parties are polarized, and it's not just differences on opinions on policy views, but also on basic consumer practices. So if you want to reach Republicans, you're going to go to pizza ranches, or you're going to advertise on NASCAR television, or you're going to send messages to owners of Land Rover SUVs. You've got the consumer culture dividing in many ways, just like the political system does. It's made advertising and emailing and internet use much easier for the campaigns in a way, but it intensifies the polarization in the country.
I would think, Stefan Schmidt, that would be a problem for businesses. Wouldn't you want to reach the greatest number of people possible rather than identify yourself as exclusionary in some way?
I think that was the sort of conventional wisdom, but I think there is, in fact, a kind of ideological and philosophical underpinning to these new enterprises. I mean, for example, the group Generation America is billing itself as a conservative alternative to AARP. Now, they're a startup business. They're a new company. It benefits them to have a kind of brand, which is, we are conservative, AARP, they're big government and Social Security and so on, so join us. So I think in that particular example, it's a case of combining, a new business acumen with actually a sort of philosophical underpinning.
That's Stefan Schmidt, who's a professor of political science at Iowa State University. Thomas Edsel at Columbia. So is the prescription here, if you're a company, what you need to do is you have your Starbucks and then you have your, I guess, Republican coffee outlet or something like that. And I perhaps I'm wrong in characterizing Starbucks as particularly Democratic. But how do you orient businesses politically? And then do you want to own both subsidiaries or do you want to compete?
Are you asking?
Yes,
you,
Thomas Edsel.
Well, in fact, the biggest companies like McDonald's, restaurant chains, McDonald's, Wendy's, and so forth, are right in the center. They appeal to both parties. It tends to be smaller chains, for example, on restaurants that appeal to different to Republicans or Democrats or conservatives and liberals. And it also tends to be the chains that are in rural areas like Cracker Barrel that appeal to red state folks, and then like Church's Chicken, you'll see that in Democratic areas. So I'm not sure that it's part of the corporate strategy as much as sort of a consequence of the way people have divided that where the restaurant locates and what kind of appeal it makes, it will draw the different partisan groups depending on other. It's not part of the corporate strategy, I don't believe.
Although some brands are beginning to embrace these kinds of things, that's for sure. Thomas Edsel, professor at the Columbia Journalism School. Stefan Schmidt, how new is this? And if I were to go into a Cracker Barrel, how would I know I'm in a Republican zone, do you think?
Would you go in carrying a concealed weapon or a sidearm or not?
I wouldn't.
You would know, because a lot of people would be, and you'd go, yikes. You know, I think there is a real broader sort of cultural division that's occurring in this country. And honestly, gun ownership, especially handgun ownership, is almost becoming a kind of indicator as well of whether you're a conservative, whether you're a Republican, or whether you're, you know, one of those squishy urban Democrats. And so it does, there is, I think, a more general cultural feel to the two parties. And people have told me that, you know, they go into a place somewhere and they feel uncomfortable because they don't feel like the people around them are essentially sort of connecting with them, or they're looking at them in a strange way. If you're gay, if you're lesbian, if you're bisexual, you know what places to kind of stay away from, for example. And I know that because some of my students have told me that. So there is along the entire sort of rift in the country, the division on even things like sexuality, I think, a decline in tolerance across the lines, and, you know, it's sort of, I want to be with my people.
How destructive do you think this is, and what does it not allow in our political discourse that you believe we need to have, Stefan Schmidt?
Well, I think what we've successfully done for 100 years or more is to try and essentially level out those differences and try to separate faith from our day-to-day interactions, tried to create a system where Congress essentially only functions if there is some cooperation across the aisles, because nobody ever has really a supermajority, which has now become the standard. And once, you know, that sort of acceptance and kind of, you know, tolerance is diminished, I think then we basically begin to come into silos. We begin to lose that ability to understand each other, and you begin to see a harshness coming into the system that is not constructive. And that's precisely why over many, many decades we have tried to pass civil rights laws, and we've tried to essentially preach that this is the United States of America, not the divided states of America.
Thomas Edsel, take us out with this thought. What do you make of the argument that, all right, people are identifying politically, they're embracing brands because of their politics. Okay, there may be some silos going on, but political engagement is good, yes?
In fact, these divisions do, there's some findings that they do increase political participation. The more polarized you are, the more intensely you feel about the outcome, and the more likely you are to vote. The problem is, as my colleague points out, that there's less and less communication between the two sides. And so you have maybe more political activity, but you don't have the capacity to compromise or to negotiate, or actually to cut a deal is really diminished.
Do you see a time in our lifetime when there will be actual Republican and Democratic seating charts in restaurants around the country?
That's possible.
Thanks. You've really ruined my day here on Tax Day. Thomas Edsel, professor at the Columbia Journalism School, author of The Age of Austerity, How Scarcity Will Remake American Politics, and Stefan Schmidt, professor of political science at Iowa State University and contributor to our co-producer WNYC's politics website. It's afreecountry.org. Thanks, gentlemen.
See ya.
And we're getting lots of responses from you. A listener in Virginia recognizes evidence of tribal politics in her life. My food is organic, my coffee fair trade, and I shop in establishments that have a liberal vibe. And then this listener in Charlotte, North Carolina says, much like Abraham Lincoln, I think it's important to expose oneself to varying opinions on matters of politics. Then a listener in Lubbock, Texas says, those married to an extreme view are usually closed-minded and can't logically defend their views. I may not find those people to be good to chat with, and so I wouldn't invite them for a beer. And finally, a listener in Brentwood, New York says, my boyfriend is libertarian. I'm very liberal. I love him in so many other ways, so we've agreed not to discuss it. I just try to think of James Carville and Mary Madeline.
Who lived happily ever after.
Give us your thoughts on cable talk shows. 877-8-MY-TAKE or post at our website, thetakeaway.org. I'm Celeste Headlee.
And I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.